Hello and welcome to another Network Optimist production of The Networking Fools, with your Networking Fools and hosts, J.W. Najarian and Bob Schechter, as they discuss business, finance, and lifestyle.
This is Bob Schechter along with J.W. Najarian. We're about to get into a conversation with Tina Loza. Tina, would you prefer Tina or Christina?
Tina. I respond much faster if you call me Tina.
Okay. Tina Loza, who is obviously a partner in the law firm Loza & Loza. They're out of California. Their specialty, patents, trademarks, copyrights. And the real reason that we're speaking to Tina tonight is internet law and IP litigation. We're all internet people, everybody listening. That's why you're here. You're listening on the internet. And we're going to ask Tina all kinds of cutting and biting questions about internet law and how it affects you online. So, Tina, welcome to the interview.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here with you both today.
All right. We're going to start it off with something that we actually just started discussing, and I don't want to lose track of that. The biggest and greatest invention seems to be of late is Facebook. They're touting that they have over 500 million users. There's conflicts coming up every day. I read it in the paper that the lawsuits are actually starting to eclipse the amount of lawsuits that Google is undergoing. So if you would, could you tell us some of the things that you're seeing about Facebook and the litigation that you're dealing with?
Sure, I'd be happy to. How about I give you a little example of something that's happened, and you can kind of see how these things take a life of their own. But basically, you have one person on Tradebook using a trademark, and then you have another person on Facebook using a trademark, and they're pretty similar. Well, Facebook doesn't really want to become an arbiter or a judge of who has trademark rights, if one is infringing on the other, if one is likely to be confused with another. Trademark infringement is essentially, is there a likelihood of confusion between two marks because the marks are very close in look, sound, and commercial impression and are being used on goods and services that are confusingly similar. That's the definition of infringement. So Facebook doesn't want to do that. They don't want to be a judge. They just want to stay out of litigation. So what they do is if someone complains about whatever trademark you're using, they take down the page. Play back and you say, I don't like their website, they take down the page. And then you have two miserable people with no Facebook pages. And they essentially have no way of doing business because there's a point where you start to make a lot of money or you start to get a lot of hits from your Facebook. And you have fans and people are following you and they are going to your website and they communicate with you and now they're not able to anymore. So sometimes it takes an act of God to just get your Facebook page up, and this is even more difficult when those give each other consent. If the police say, okay, if you do this, then I'll let you your page back up, and if you do this, then I'll let the page back up, then everybody will be live again. But if the parties don't do that, if they can't agree, then they end up in litigation.
Wow. So even though they don't want to be the arbiters, de facto they've become judge and jury.
Yeah, they don't give anyone a chance. They say, we're not going to get in the middle of your fight. We just take down everybody's page. So, yes, they become judge and jury. They take down everybody's page. Everybody's miserable. And so they kind of force people, if they want to get back on Facebook, to get along or not get along and go into federal court.
Okay. So is Facebook then waiting for a few cases so they'll have some precedents to say, okay, this is how it has to be. We don't take down either page. You guys just go fight it out?
I think they must be waiting for that. They must be waiting for some guidance on this issue from the courts. But right now, I don't think there is a lot of guidance because you file a lawsuit for another year and a half usually, unless the case settles. And people don't put their settlement agreements online. They're usually confidential. So the way someone gets back up on Facebook is usually not because of Facebook's help. It's usually because they've come to an agreement of some kind.
So are you saying that, Tina, are you saying that you actually go after Facebook or help them go after Facebook in some way?
I've never gone after Facebook directly. I've helped I usually help resolve the issue between the parties because to go after Facebook, like I said, it's going to take 2 years. And you're going to be in litigation with somebody who obviously has deeper pockets. Most of these people on Facebook, they're you know, solopreneurs, small business owners. Of course, there's larger businesses on there, but the people who are really affected by Facebook taking their page down are small businesses. And they're not going to fight Facebook. They just want their page back up.
Right. And I don't think you have a leg to stand on fighting Facebook anyway, because they're, when you go in, you sign a thing, you know, where you
say,
I agree. You, so, and it, so if their waiver covers them, so if their waiver covers them, why did they feel compelled to take both sites down?
Because their waiver basically says, you're not allowed to do the X, Y, Z, and we have the right to take you down. That's what their waiver says.
Right.
But someone could technically sue them for contributory infringement if they didn't take the page down. So the way that they solve that is to just say, I don't want to get into technicalities. I don't want to become a judge. I'm just going to take everybody down. You just have to make a, honestly, you just have to make a colorable claim. I've seen it happen. You just have, you honestly don't even have to look. You just say, I don't like this person, and you can take somebody's page down.
Okay. And
their standards are very low. It's a little bit frustrating when you see it happen to someone who really, there's no reason for this to go down.
And did you say, Tina, that the Facebook can be hard to work with to get back up?
Yes. Very hard to work with. They have a huge backlog, and they don't have the staff to take care of it. At least that's what they say. And so to actually get some motion, if I were to file a complaint today, a page might not be down until Friday or maybe next Monday.
Yeah, we're finding the same issues with Twitter. I don't know if you're seeing Twitter issues also, but...
I haven't spent as much time with the Twitter issues. Facebook has mostly been my personal headache these days.
Right. Okay, it's incredible stuff. I mean, and this a lot of it, you know, what we're seeing is, when you mentioned it also, domain issues where, you know, I can grab anything that sounds like anybody else's domain, and I can, the people that run that process, they really don't care. They also will not be the arbiters, and you have to sue the people that take. So how does that work also? I mean, at what point... You know, am I allowed to take a domain?
Let's just start the topic with, let me just suggest this. You guys are in charge of the call, obviously, but let me suggest this. The first step you should always take is prevention, okay? When you decide that you're going to go into business, you get a trademark, you automatically should go in there and get every variation that you can think of, because when you get rich and famous, people will try to rip you off. And so it's best to just buy, what is it, like $10 a domain name or something like that on GoDaddy. You just go, you buy 15 of them, you have them, and you keep them there, because it ends up being an asset. It's your intellectual property portfolio is included in that, and it's a saleable good at the end when you sell your business, right? So the best thing to do is get a nice little package of domain names, and you have all of them, and you have confusingly different spelling. So networkingfool.com, I would say do networkingfool.biz and networkingfool.net, which I'm sure you guys have already done, and maybe do a misspelling, drop an O, or make fool with F-U-L, and have a couple of misspellings in there so that you kind of have a nice little package there of different domain names, so that somebody's not coming along and getting it. Now, what ends up happening, of course, is that people don't do that, and people get confusingly similar variations, and then they start to drive this business towards their site, and then you have a domain name dispute. There's two ways to resolve those. One is to go to federal court on a trademark infringement action. So you say, okay, I have a registered trademark. They're infringing my trademark. This is a violation of the Lanham Act, and you sue in federal court, and it takes, you know, a year and a half and, you know, $120,000, and you get some kind of a decision.
Can we back up a little bit? Because one of the issues that we see are people... I've had people call me and say, I've been sitting on this .com for, you know, a couple of years. You know, I've owned this .com a long time. I just happened to, you know, get my business up now, and now we're going. And I find out there's three other companies that have similar names. They might not have the .com, but they're incorporated in the whole bit. So before you go out and get all these names, do you have to trademark and incorporate first? Is that smart?
So a name is really just an address. Like, I live at 123 Main Street, let's say. That's just an address. It doesn't give you any true rights. What gives you rights is use and commerce. So just having a domain name that resolves to a park website doesn't give you any trademark rights at all. All it gives you is an address, the location. what you need to establish rights is not necessarily, you know, getting a Secretary of State filing for your corporation, but really true use in commerce. So putting up that trademark on that page and selling goods and services via that page. And until you do that, you can't show that you're using the mark in commerce, and you can't assert that mark against other people. So those people might have a domain name, but they've essentially gotten scooped by other people who have used the mark in commerce first.
And is there a threshold of how much use in commerce? Because unfortunately what I've seen is people will grab a domain name and not necessarily park it, but put it up on a website where they get absolutely no traffic, nothing, but they have it on a substantial website, and they are selling things, but they haven't made any
sales. It's not token sales. Like, it's not somebody who's calling their cousin and say, hey, buy from me so I can show sales in interstate commerce.
Well, they haven't even done any sales.
Okay.
They just put it up and they're selling. You know, I can put something up and show that I'm trying to sell products, but I never make a sale. So what happens to that? I mean, I have tried.
If you have it available, I would say that there's definitely some use in commerce. You're trying to make sales in interstate commerce. You're providing services in interstate commerce. I think there's definitely an argument that there is some prior use. But there has to be something up there. It can't just be some token use where there's really no ability to purchase. You have to be able to click on something and actually pay for something.
I got
a phone number that works, address that works, a way to make a transaction with the person.
Okay. Well, then as long as we're on that subject, I might as well ask you something that relates to us.
Sure.
Networking Fool is something that we have incorporated in Florida. It's actually been incorporated for 3 years now. But I never really did any particular business with it other than my idiotic networking. And now we're very active. We have a huge site. But we haven't really gotten into selling anything because our intent wasn't to necessarily sell anything but get advertising from the eyeballs that we have there. And how does that work as far as commerce? Is it
You're using the mark in commerce because it's a service that you're providing, and these are services that you're providing on the internet, which is considered commerce. So you might not be making money for it necessarily, but there is a service, and you can file trademarks in connection with goods or services, and there's a definition that would clearly fit a website like yours. So I have no doubt that you have rights to the mark Networking Fool, for example, assuming that no one was using the mark before you.
Right. And I did research it. Thus far, it seems nobody has. But the question would be, could somebody come along now that we're making this public, and go out and do this?
Pretty public, yeah. No, once you can prove use, which you can do at this point, once you can prove use, you can use your earliest date of use, and that trumps even a registration before the Patent and Trademark Office.
Okay.
But you have to be able to prove use.
Okay, and then obviously be able to afford to go out and get a trademark.
Yes. I mean, it's always good to have a trademark and to have trademark rights and something and all of that, but really the most important thing is to have legitimate, bona fide use in commerce.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
JW, do we have any other examples particularly that are affecting us now that we want to talk about?
Well, I guess the biggest one, she's answered it, but we have somebody who came up with a name. We do channels we're starting channels for people who want to do particular things. And this person has come up with a name that they really like. And we scoured the web and didn't find anything except one corporation has made about a year and a half ago. And they're not selling anything or doing anything. We can't even find the owners. So we're wondering, hey, can we still use the name if we are doing some service with it? Or since it's somebody else's corporation, they could launch in a month some super huge thing, and then they can come after us because they had it trademarked and everything, and we didn't know about it.
Well, just using it as your corporate name is not enough. There has to be, you know, once again, use in commerce. Now, a lot of people will file corporations, and that's not the name that they use necessarily out in the world. Now, in terms of the search that you're doing, I would, yes, you should definitely do searches online in Google and Yahoo and whatever search engines you use, but you also need to think about doing a search with the Patent and Trademark Office. The website for that is www.uspto. And you need to do some searching there to see if there's any registered trademarks there to make sure that nobody is using the mark in connection with similar goods. Now, when you do a search there, it's not exactly the most wonderful user-friendly site in the world.
Let me back you up.
Not to slam.
Let me back you up. I apologize, but when you said the site, you cut out.
Oh, okay. It's uspto.gov. And that's the United States Patent Trademark Office.gov.
And I'm sure they charge a little fee to do a search?
No, there's no fee. It's free.
Oh,
it is free, but it's also not easy to do or user-friendly in any way.
Yeah, you have to have an MIT. You have to have a degree from MIT to get through it.
It's okay, but the thing is, when you search for a trademark, you could, let's say I put in a name for something, and it might come up with so many other marks that are very similar, let's say, that would be concerning to you, but let's say we're doing internet website services providing interviews regarding intellectual property. Okay, let's say that that's our description of services. However, you know, maybe someone is using Networking Fool in connection with clothing or a restaurant. Or something.
Right.
Is that confusingly similar? Well, that's when you kind of need someone to come in and say, you know, there are other people who are using similar marks to yours, and this concerns me or this doesn't concern me. And so when you're doing a search, it's a good idea to, if you're not using an attorney, if someone is using something in connection with similar goods or services, that's when you should be worried. If they're using something with tires and you're going to use it in connection with an internet service that provides interviews, it's probably less likely that people would be confused and thus there would be no trademark infringement.
And
Coca-Cola
or, you know, Winston Tires or something, you use those names. Winston Tires Services and you have legal services, you're kind of working off their name a little more and they might get upset?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. When you have there's a different standard for what's considered famous marks. So if you tried to write off of the goodwill of a Pepsi who actually has goods and services in almost every single class, then you're obviously going to end up with a cease and desist letter. But if it's something where you're not trying to write off of a large company and one person is selling real estate services and one person is selling tires, probably not likely to be confusing.
Does it help you as a litigator or arbiter, you know, when the person has done that search and has it in their documents when they bring it to arbitration or whatever, to show that they at least did due diligence?
Uh-huh. That's good. It shows that they proceeded in good faith, and they're unlikely to get trouble. You know, for litigation, if you can show that you didn't operate in bad faith, the other side's unlikely to win attorney's fees or get treble damages, and that's good. So it's nice to have that opinion letter that says this is unlikely. And there's different levels of searches. There's preliminary searching that your attorney might do. There's searching services that you use. A very popular one is Thompson. That's the one my firm uses. And essentially you order a search in connection with certain goods and services. It comes back. It's about a 300-page book. And you go through it and you prepare an opinion letter for the client summarizing what's in that book. And the client can keep that opinion letter in their files in case they're ever litigated, you know, in case ever, litigation ever arises.
Interesting. But you can't stop somebody.
Documentation wins.
Yeah, you can't stop somebody from suing you. But I'm going to ask you about a case that actually came up. It affected me. Just to get your opinion, because it's already gone and done. But I have a group that it's called Florida CRE. It's commercial real estate, Florida commercial real estate. And I was sent a lawyer's letter from an organization that's called, well, they're called CRE, something commercial real estate, whatever they are, but it's a group about real estate, but really not related to what I was doing in Florida real estate, but they use CRE as their designation, if you will. So that's where they felt that there would be confusion. I think their actual group name is like Consultants of Real Estate. So they sent me a letter saying, cease and desist, You can no longer use the name Florida CRE or FloridaCRE.com because there would be confusion. That the exact words that they used was, our members might look and say, Florida CRE, well, you're associated with that Florida CRE, even though that's not Florida CRE. They just called themselves CRE as their designation. So where do you think that would wind up going?
Well, the way that would wind up going, and I know that this might pick you off, but but the way that this might wind up going is they kind of have a case, because what happens is it's not just confusing similarity, but would people think, aside from being confused, would they think that there's some affiliation or sponsorship between the websites? And these days, if you have a CRE, which is the main organization, they might have branches in every state, and they might license that name out to, say, an exclusive distributor in that state who's using Florida CRE and California CRE. And then their exclusive distributor in that state might say, hey, I'm an exclusive distributor. How come this other person has this site? And so there's this whole problem with sponsorship and affiliation. And so although if you were, for example, using Florida CRE and you were selling, I don't know, high-heel shoes in a retail shop,
right,
that's one thing, but you're not using it for that. You're using it for real estate as well. And so that affiliation and sponsorship problem might be, it might be there. There's a colorable claim that they made.
Okay, so, and let me just make sure, their actual name is Counselors of Real Estate, and all they are is a professional, they're a professional organization that does a real estate journal, and they're a group of real estate people that talk to each other. But they don't sell real estate.
What does CRE stand for?
Their CRE is Counselors of Real Estate. That's what their CRE stands for.
What does stand for? What's your CRE?
Commercial Real Estate.
And this is another question, Tina, because they might under what he told you, they might have a claim, but there's also acronyms that are used, you know, like I can't take the word man and trademark the word man because somebody said the word man and I'd get 10 cents or something. So CRE is an acronym that's been used for years in commercial real estate. So
okay, I can't give an opinion like that without knowing all the
facts. The acronym is very used. You might have a
by other organizations, not being licensed out by this other CRE, by other organizations.
Right. They just call themselves Counselors of Real Estate. It's CRE, when you get a designation from them, it would be like Bob Schechter, CRE. That's what they're trying to do, designate. So, and I know I explained it wrong, but just so you
No, you didn't. I probably answered too soon. But the other thing is, there's obviously arguments you can make. Okay, so your CRE stands for different, it has different words associated with it. So you can see the sign, I have it spelled out on my website, it's CRE. Our logos look different, they're different colors, the fonts are different. I'm not using it as a professional designation, you're using it as a professional certification. You need a special trademark for that, it's not a normal trademark, it's a certification mark. And you haven't obtained that. And so as a result, you know, I'm not infringing and you can go pound sand. I mean, there's arguments that can be made.
Okay. Well, when I went to search for this CRE that they use, what I found was that they didn't capture or trademark the CRE because as it turns out, you can't trademark just the initial CRE. You have to have a particular logo and designation, a logo of some sort, and colors, like you were just saying, that go with it. And theirs is like totally just CRE with a line under it. And mine was totally different, and it's Florida CRE. But, of course, being a single, you know, just a person, I don't have any money, I actually wound up calling up their attorneys and saying, look, here's my position. Tell me what you want to do. And they were very nice. They said, well, we don't really have a leg to stand on. they just said, do you understand how much, if we were confused as attorneys, we would just be able to go into court and tell the court that there was confusion. And if our members felt confused, we might win. So he told me to be very careful. Okay. It didn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, usually once you call the attorneys, if it's one of these kind of like gray area cases,
yeah,
you know, it doesn't bother us that much, but maybe could you change this and this and put a disclaimer on your website? I think people freak out a little bit too much when they get a cease and desist letter. And, yeah, if you're a layperson and you get this thing that says that they're going to sue you in federal court for, you know, the news, and it's a little scary, especially if you invest some money in your business, right? So you get this, this letter, and usually you can call the attorney, and or you can have your attorney call their attorney, and it's it can be resolved quickly. Sometimes you just, if it's a product, for example, you know, a reasonable attorney will give you a, if it's not a clear, you know, rip-off artist, and it was truly something that was done almost unintentionally, they usually give you a sell-off period. They usually say, okay, sell off your goods for the next 6 months and change your mark, or whatever it is. So okay. I don't think it's necessarily to necessary to completely freak out if you're the recipient of one of these letters. There's certainly, and you know, I was able to just argue both sides of the same thing.
Yeah.
So there's certainly gray area, and most people can do that. I think most attorneys worth their salt can take a trademark case and say, yeah, there's gray area here, but your side is stronger, or your side is stronger, and this is how we're going to argue it, and let's see what we can do for you.
So we can invoke yeah, but law.
Pardon?
We can invoke the yeah, but law. That's the yeah, but I don't think
so. I was terrified.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, it was terrifying. I mean, only because they gave me this, you know, you have 10 days to shut it off,
yeah,
or we're going to sue you. And, of course, my righteous indignation came up, and I went on LinkedIn. Put a question in, which is thankfully how I found you to ask these questions. But I got back about 50 responses from various attorneys on that question, and they were all over the place. But I did
reasonable
get enough.
Attorneys can differ. That's how we make money.
Yeah. Okay. Touché. There you go. All right. Well, the next question that has come up is there going to be a time on the internet where there's, and I'm not going to say an arbitrator, but some logic will prevail to keep the lawsuits from just mounting and mounting and mounting? Well, you know, I don't think I've seen that in ordinary law, but I'm convinced, and most of the people I've spoken to keep thinking that while in the normal courts you have hundreds of thousands of cases, on the internet it's going to be millions of millions. Somebody has to say, you know, there has to be guidelines for what's frivolous so that it doesn't just keep going into court.
Sure. Well, for domain name disputes, there is an arbiter. You can go to WIPO or you can go to the National Arbitration Forum and go to them, and you essentially file your domain name dispute, you file a complaint, and within 2 months and a couple grand, you have a decision, and you either keep your domain name or lose your domain name. And that's great. That's a really fast way to resolve these things quickly and cheaply, much cheaper than you would see in terms of litigation. There's no discovery. It's essentially the party who wants their domain name back files a complaint. The other party answers. Both parties are allowed to make additional submissions, and then it goes to a one- or three-person panel, and they decide, and they release a decision. It's very straightforward. And so that's very cost effective, and I've done that several times, and it's nice that I don't have to wait that long, and they get a resolution quickly, whatever the resolution would be. So obviously that's already happening at some level. In terms of actual trademark infringement cases, I think we're stuck with the federal court for right now, or patent infringement cases or whatnot. I think you're still going to a court for the time being.
Wow. It could be endless.
But I think all the people who are filing, for the most part, I mean, yes, there's this chance for frivolous lawsuits, but these cases cost money, and attorneys who do intellectual property litigation are not cheap. The vast majority of intellectual property attorneys do not work on contingency.
Right.
So patent litigation is called the game of things because it's so expensive. So you're looking at a situation where people don't go into these litigation cases lightly. This is not something that's resolved with $30,000. You're looking at six-digit lawsuits. And so most attorneys worth their salt will advise their clients, listen, you should settle this out of court if you don't want to spend the next year and a half you know, $250,000 invested in this. In some cases, it's worth it. And that's the limiting factor. That's how this is not bogging down. I mean, it is bogging down the courts, but this is how it's not as likely as a personal injury lawsuit to go into court.
Right. Okay. Only because of the expense. Okay.
Sure.
But, I mean, you know, the expense notwithstanding, that's because there are so few attorneys that are really adept and practicing this, but over the next few years, as, you know, more and more, in other words, you're going to go from attorneys to ambulance chasers who feel that they can make a buck, and, I'll see them at 2 o'clock in the morning,
well,
you know, doing infomercials. So, and with the proliferation of the Internet, I'm in Florida, and somebody has a brilliant idea in Seattle, doesn't know me from Adam, but says, wow, you're a networking fool. And poof, next thing you know, we meet each other on the Internet. So the chances are we never would have known about each other 10 years ago. But now with the Internet, it's just too easy to meet.
It's easy to find infringers, but it's also easy to avoid infringers. I mean, I really try to counsel my clients on prevention as much as I do about moving forward and building their portfolio. You have to really think, how am I going to stay out of trouble? You don't start using a trademark unless you've done some searching and made sure that no one else is using it. And you need to search everywhere. You got to search for search book. You got to put those names inside domain names and see if they're coming up. You really need to be, you know, on the ball. You can't just use a name. There's so many resources available just to make sure that we're not infringing. So I think people really need to be diligent before they start using a trademark. Whatever it may be. And I don't know about intellectual property attorneys. There's a lot of people who are trying to be intellectual property attorneys, and I'm not trying to be a snob. The patent bar is a small one. You have to take a special, you know, exam to become a patent attorney, but anyone can litigate a patent. Whether they understand the patent they're litigating is a whole other story. So that's why, you know, you usually see IP firms really with someone who has done some patent work before reading these things so that they understand what's going on, because a patent is not an easy document to read. Trademark is a little bit easier, so you see more people doing it, and copyright with that same you know, attitude is easier than patent. So you see more attorneys doing trademark and copyright litigation than patent. And I don't think it's ever going to become an ambulance chaser type. You know, I think it's always going to be sort of limited because it's not easy law.
Okay.
Be fair with her, Bob. She's not going to become an ambulance chaser.
Well, no. I mean, that's why we're lucky enough to be able to talk to Tina, because we actually search the Internet to find a professional that is on top of their game. But, you know, before we get into my next question, which you almost started on, which is copyrights, because there is this overlap between the two, I would ask one question to get back to the domains. My friend Vinny owns a pizza place, and he never knew about the guy three blocks down that had Vinny's pizza place. But both of them are Vinny. Okay, well, now they're both taking orders online, so the next thing you know, in my little local area, there's 30 Vinny's pizza places. Are they not allowed to use their own names?
You are allowed to use your own name. it's kind of a confusing area, to be honest with you, because it will come down to prior use. If you have two Vinny's in the same very small regional space, you could end up having the first Vinny scoop the second Vinny and ask the second Vinny to change his name to something else, either Vinny's last name or something else to distinguish the two.
Okay.
Because you can't ask somebody to obviously change their name. They're all Vinny's, but the first person who was there in that small regional area can say, listen, you are causing some confusion here. And it's to the best of everybody's business to change it in some way. And usually the first person in the area is the one who's going to have some pull here. So they're probably going to say, hey, change your name to DeLuca's or whatever, and that's what it's going to be instead of Denny's. And then, of course, you have to deal with Dean and DeLuca, and you have a whole other issue. But
okay.
But the bottom line is, yeah, I mean, you can use your name, but you should, once again, scope out your area, because if there's another Vinny, it's going to hurt your business as much as it's going to hurt theirs.
or help your business way more than it'll help theirs.
Which, yes, that's true.
All right.
Yeah, people try to ride off of the goodwill of other people's.
Yeah, of course.
And that's why the first Vinny should have gotten all the domain names that would have been related with that, so he could have gotten rid of the other Vinny as well.
Ah, okay. Well, but you can only buy so many. I mean, you know.
I know. There's always something to do. There's always some change. And you know, that's
Vinny's,
just kind of thing.
See,
you have to come to a business solution in these situations. And usually the first Vinny is the one who has more rights than the second Vinny. So you're going to have...
Okay. Well, you know, as simplistic, as simplistic as all this sounds now, when there are maybe only 100 million websites up there, you know, in 5 years, when there's a billion websites up there, you know, it's going to be even more coming. It's like the phone company. There's only so many phone numbers unless you can extend it to 15 numbers next. With internets, I mean, you're working with a much more finite amount of information. They had to go from .com to, you know, .net to .ca. And now, am I allowed, and that's my next question, if I have a great concept and somebody didn't grab the ., they grabbed the .com, but they didn't grab the .net, I'm assuming now that I'm still infringing? Even if they weren't smart enough to grab it?
Are you going to use it with the same goods and services or different goods and services?
Well, probably the same. You know, there's a certain point at which, you know, marketing 101 on the internet tells you to go out there, do a keyword search, do a long-tail keyword search, and now you know, in fact, it tells you to go to Amazon and go to Google and find out who's selling widgets and then go out and, you know, if widgets are the hot item, don't reinvent the wheel. Go sell widgets. And if you find somebody selling widgets under the name Joe Blow, well, why not use my Joe Blow widgets? And, you know, yes, you're capitalizing off of what they've done. I mean, I assume at some level it's illegal. What can they do to you? I mean, can they sue you for past monies you've made, or is there a limit to that?
Well, it depends on what their goal is. If their goal is to just get you to stop using the domain name and own it themselves so that they can use it, because stopping you is a good result, okay? Stopping the other person and getting it for yourself so that you have it is a good result because they're not taking business from you. If that's their goal, then they're going to go to the National Arbitration Forum and they're going to start a domain name dispute and they're going to get their domain name back, maybe. The other way to do it is obviously that they would have to go into federal court. Now, is this a descriptive website? Is this a totally descriptive thing of what you're selling? Because if you're selling cars, and you have cars.com, and then somebody else says mycars.com, and you're selling cars, you can't take the word cars out of the human lexicon. You have to allow other people to use the word cars. And
right.
So in that sense, you have a situation where you can't prevent other people from using similar marks. But if it's something that's very distinctive and it's not descriptive of the goods, for example, Apple for computers,
right.
Now, of course, that's everybody knows what that is. You know, I say, oh, I got an Apple. I mean, everybody knows what I'm talking about. But you know, when Apple started, Apple for computers was completely random. Why would you ever use the mark Apple for computers, right? So it depends on the mark that you're using. So now if someone comes along and does my Apple and sells computers, hell yeah, that's confusing.
Right, okay.
So
okay.
It really depends on how to, but if someone sells my computer, okay, you can't take computers, but that's a descriptive word. So it depends on the mark and how it's being used.
Okay.
Yeah, let me ask you, because
sure.
I saw GoDaddy, where they have a thing. We had a friend just recently who, for whatever reason, they had another company taking care of their website. And for whatever reason, the website name came up, the URL came up for renewal, and the company didn't renew. So now they lost that URL. Hopefully they'll get it back. But here's the deal. On GoDaddy, it said, you have an option for $4 a year or some ridiculous amount that says lock your URL in just in case, you know, it expires on you. That's has anybody ever sued anybody that you've seen over somebody losing a URL for them that was very, you know, something that's very descriptive of their business and very important to their business?
I have not been litigated, but I've gotten so many calls on this, and it's always sad. Because what happens is you don't get it back, and sometimes, like I've seen, not GoDaddy, but I've seen the registrar 1&1, for example. If you lose it, they will just say, they will put it up for auction, and they'll sell it back to you, but for like $3,000 when you bought it for $8,000.
Wow.
And so if they put it up for auction, they'll say, you want it, go ahead and buy it. Otherwise, sorry.
Wow. Well, I guess that, like any area of the law, ignorance of the law is no excuse. If you can't fix stupid.
You're entering a contract when you enter into those agreements when you buy your name, and they own it. So unless you keep it up and pay your $4 a year, which you'd be ridiculous, I think most people would be ridiculous not to, then I think it's, it's shame on you. I mean, you really need to keep up with it, and when it happens, it really sucks because I've seen it happen, and people have to buy their domain name back.
It's crazy.
I want to make sure
we don't keep you all night, but I do have another question for you because I've seen something come up recently. We obviously you and I have been speaking about this, so now I've gotten into this with several members of our groups, and one of the things that they see coming up a lot is the overlap between copyright and IP and trademark, in that if you have on your website copyright, that people believe that that covers everything on your site, whether you have a logo or it becomes your intellectual property that's copyrighted. Is that true?
No, it's not. that's the easy answer. I think, do you mind if I just give a 2-second primer?
No, I would love
area
to.
Is that everybody? Okay.
Go ahead.
So I have to do patent, trademark, and copyright to give a really good idea of what I'm talking about. So that I think the biggest call that I get is I want to copyright this or trademark that, and they don't know what they're talking about in terms of what area it is. So patent protects inventions or ideas for new, useful, and non-obvious inventions. So that's patent. It protects your new widget. The standard for a patent is that the product or the good has to be new, useful, and non-obvious. Okay? So that's inventions. Trademarks protect a symbol that you use to represent your business, whether that be words or a logo of some kind or a slogan of some kind. Your trademark, for example, is Networking Fool.
Right.
Okay? So that's trademark. Copyright protects anything that can be fixed in a tangible medium. So the way that your website, the look and feel of your website, words on your website. So the first thing that I see on your website is there's a box that says Networking Fool is about interviews, broadcasts, connecting, discussing, engaging, referring, educating, and entertaining. Join us. So that little blurb right there is words fixed in a tangible medium, and those words are copyrightable, okay? So words, any drawings, these pictures that you have on your website, those pictures actually belong to the photographer, and those people probably got permission from the photographer and then gave you permission to use those pictures.
Right.
Anything that you fix in a tangible medium belongs to you. So on your website, when you say copyright notice, it really is protecting the words that you have fixed onto your website. It's not, and it's protecting the look and feel, and it's protecting the picture, your fonts, and the articles that you've written and the information that is on there. So all of your articles are writable if you're writing them. This interview is being fixed on kind of a digital file right now. This digital file is copyrightable, for example.
Right.
Sorry. I should have brought more coffee or water or something. and so all of that falls under the realm of copyright. If I write a song right now because I'm so happy about being on the phone with you, that song would be copyrightable. All of that type of stuff is copyrightable, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So just because the symbol, Networking Fool, though, just because it happens to be on your website doesn't necessarily mean that you have trademark protection. It's a separate area. If you want protection from somebody using a confusingly similar mark in connection with related goods or services, then you have to get a trademark, a registered trademark, covered by the copyright.
Okay. And
okay.
Because I put that little copyright and that little C on the bottom of my website.
Mm-hmm. Yes, copyright and important arguments.
Yeah, is that sufficient notice?
That is sufficient notice of your copyright, and it's notice that you think that this page is copyrightable, but you have not registered. I don't know if you've registered your website with the copyright office, but you are able to get a registered copyright if you wanted to.
Okay.
But the reason for doing a registered as opposed to an unregistered copyright is because you would be able to get statutory damages. And so that's the reason to go ahead and do that. So, I mean, obviously you don't copyright every picture or every article or whatnot, but some people will do their websites just to protect the look and feel, someone else coming around and doing networking idiots and creating the same kind of book that you post the page. Do you know what I'm saying? So something like that, or and they do the same kind of look and feel. You say, listen, I have a registered copyright on this, and you're using the same kind of look, and you're using some of the same kind of wording on here, and it's confusing. And they're substantially similar, and I think that you're creating a there's copyright infringement here.
Gotcha. And if I grab the text off of somebody else's page and use it on my website, I have infringed on their copyright then?
Well, it depends. Are you giving them credit? How much have you grabbed? Have you grabbed the whole article? Have you grabbed a word and then them back to the other person's blog, let's say? Are you making a profit off of it, or are you not making a profit off of it? There might be some fair use arguments that allow you to use it. So the answer to that question is it depends. Now, what's the smart thing to do? Always give people credit. Always link back to their site. Don't take an entire article. Take a portion of it, and then obviously give the credit and refer back. And don't make any money off of it. Don't sell their article to make you money.
Gotcha. So the first criteria then would be, is there any intent or harm done? I mean, how would they sue you if I've done no harm except to get them more traffic?
Exactly. That's the thing with most a lot of the smaller copyright cases, like, oh, he put my pictures on his website and blah, blah, blah. Okay, what are your damages?
Right.
What are your damages? We're going to $10,000 just to file a complaint. So what are your damages? What, $300, $400? Let's just ask them to take them down and say sorry.
Right.
Because that's really your goal, is you just don't want them to use pictures anymore.
Right. Okay. Well, I don't want to keep you all night, and I always like to end these interviews by trying to talk my guests into coming back for another one. So I'm going
to
do that.
I love talking about this stuff. I'm passionate about it. I love this area of the law. It's a lot of fun. And,
okay.
I really enjoy it. So I'm always happy to talk to you. It's not a problem.
Okay. Well, we actually are going to have some discussions, some panel discussions, business panel discussions, and we might try and wrangle you into being a panelist so that people can actually ask you a bit more intellectual, questions than we've, less broad-minded questions.
Great questions. These are great questions.
Okay, thanks.
We're called the fools for a reason.
No, these are not foolish questions. You should hear, you don't know foolish questions until you've been on the receiving end of my phone for all these years, and then I've heard some real winners, so.
All right,
worry about that.
Well, I want to thank you again, Tina Loza. The firm is Loza and Loza, and this is your husband and yourself, that's the two Lozas, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And the website, in case anybody wants to speak to Tina directly, the website is loza, L-O-Z-A-I-P.com.
And as you can tell from our conversation, Tina is a delight to talk to and always helpful. So, Tina, thank you very much for joining us. I can't wait to get you involved in some more of our stuff. And hopefully, if anybody has any issues that they want to talk about, they'll call you directly.
Great. Thank you so much for the opportunity to talking with you both. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, JW. Have a great afternoon or evening. I don't know where you're at. And I'll talk to you soon.
Well, all right.
You.
Thanks again.
To get more interviews and to find the original of this interview, it's on. You go to www.networkingfool.com.
That's right. We need to tell people where to find it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Thanks again.
Right.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Networking Fools Show, featured on Blog Talk Radio and on the Networking Fools website at www.networkingfools.com. Networking Fools is the property of Network Alchemists. Networking Fools, Network Alchemists, Nalchemists, and Nalchemy are trademarks of the Network Alchemists, LLC, and this podcast is copyright 2010, and all rights are reserved.